Hey, beautiful souls, I'm Colleen, and this is the Hair Healer Podcast. On my show, my guests and I untangle our web of relationships as children, partners, employees, parents, and strip away the labels that define our identity. On each episode, my guests and I open our souls and start a dialogue in order to span this gap, create a spiritual bond, and cultivate deep interpersonal connections. Hey, loves, and welcome back to the Hair Healer Podcast. We are currently down in Rittenhouse Square at PhD Philadelphia Hair Design with Kate Curran, owner and friend who I've known for a couple years. Say hello.
Hi, everybody.
And we apologize because we travel. There's a little bit of an echo, but it kind of cool. It adds an ambiance to it. But since we're traveling, you know, we can't set up soundproofing and everything, so don't mind. It's not too bad. But how are you today?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy that you guys are here.
Thank you. Is this your first podcast? Have you ever done a podcast before?
This is my first.
Nice. Yeah. How do you feel? Nervous or ready?
No, ready. I'm excited.
Yeah. When we popped up here, you were super calm. You're ready. She has an amazing salon, amazing energy, amazing space. She showed us around, and like, we're sitting right now to set the mode in this giant window on, what's the street called?
Pine Street. This is actually the largest single pane of glass on Pine Street.
Are you serious?
Yeah, isn't that cool?
That's so cool. So how did you get this place? Did you like manifest it? How'd you know this was?
So I was looking with a friend of mine that's actually my realtor, helped me find my house, has helped a bunch of my friends find their houses. And over the years, we were looking at different spaces. For a while, I was looking to buy something and then started searching for like a lease situation. And I was really set on this place in Passyunk Square because it's closer to where I live. And I love the vibe down there. It's very like almost European feeling. It's very like walkable and neighborhoody. But I was set on this one place and we kept going back to look at it. And the landlord was a nightmare.
Why?
Just like it was obvious. Every time we went there, there'd be like somebody that lived upstairs being like, oh man, this guy, like, yeah. So it was just like, no, I have to like protect myself from that.
Trust.
And then, pretty soon after that, my realtor was like, hey, I actually have the perfect place for you. It's my office and it has everything that you're looking for.
And it was this?
It was this.
Wow. Yeah. And had this ever been a salon?
Nope. So I got to completely create it in the way that I wanted it to be. It was kind of just a blank canvas.
Wow. It's so cool. It's so open floor. I love the back and I am obsessed with this window.
Yeah. I wanted it to be very inviting and almost feel like you're walking into somebody's house.
Yeah.
And just like casual and comfy, but still like kind of minimal and upscale feeling at the same time.
Well, you nailed it. That's exactly how it feels. Now I met Kate, I want to say, I think it was like 2016 or 17. Yeah. And she came to Capriotto Salon to do a balayage class, right? She's a Red Connect educator. And we instantly got to talking as, of course, we're going to flow freely like we are already. And we just chatted and I loved her energy. And I live in Westchester and she was currently working out there and had built a clientele for what, 10 years?
10 years.
And then we became friends on social media and I've been following her since then. I just remember like I was so impressed and I love watching because it takes a lot to like leave your clientele behind, like in knowing, yes, some followed you, but you know that you're going to lose half when you go an hour away.
Yeah.
You currently went from an hour away from Westchester, Philadelphia. And just like, I remember then you were like, started to open the salon. I was like, holy shit, look at her go. Like, I love that. Like you followed your dreams, you left and then look at you shining. So what was that? Like, what was going through your mind when you left your entire clientele and just like, we're like, you know what? It's going to work out the way it's going to work out.
It was a huge decision and it was one that was really hard to make because I was very happy with the salon that I was at. It felt like a family that I was a part of, you know, the staff, like people don't leave Avante.
Yeah. Oh, I've heard amazing things of that.
And it was an amazing place for me to like grow and become who I am as a stylist. But there was a certain point that I hit where I was like, there's no more growth here.
Yeah.
And being the person that I am, it was like, okay, well you have to change it. Right?
Yes.
I'm not ever happy staying stagnant. Same. I'm always reaching for the next thing.
I love that.
Even if it's a completely different avenue.
Yeah.
You know,
you just knew like it was like the max and it's time to go. So when was that final moment or what took you the courage to be like, I'm doing it. I'm just going to do it. Fuck it.
Gosh, I don't know if there was like a huge turning point. It was just a feeling and knowing that it was time to move on. And a good friend of mine who actually is a stylist here now.
Oh, and cool.
We met at our Redken Artist training, the first training. He had started working. It was interesting. We had kind of the same situation. We were both like living in the city, but had been working at a salon in the suburbs for 10 years and knew that we needed to change. And he actually did it a year before me and started working at another salon in the city. So I kind of followed his move and started working there with him.
And what was that? Was that
situation in itself?
Was it easy to build again? Like, and feel like, did it come right?
It was very easy for me because
well, you're very talented.
Thank you. But it was, I think the city had more of the clientele that I was looking for.
Yeah.
You know, people in the city are looking for a different type of hair, a different
a little more artistic, creative.
Not necessarily. Well, yeah.
I mean, honestly.
Like, I don't want to say anything bad about
hair
that's happening in the suburbs because there is some amazing stuff happening there, but there's just less of it.
There's less diversity, right?
There's like a thing that I was so used to doing, like the Chester County blonde.
I was just thinking when you, as you were talking about that, I'm thinking the blonde the whole time.
So, and now it's, you know, I was able to cultivate a clientele of people that want what I want to do, you know, and put it out there and they would find me and know that that's what I was looking
for. Much more diverse style and hair. And as I had my clientele on the main line, so same. So like 10 times a year, someone would come in with like a different funky haircut and like a color. And I was so happy, but here that's 80% of your clientele probably.
Absolutely.
Right. Yeah. That's amazing. So you knew right away, just, this is it.
Yeah.
You can live out your creative.
Yeah. And at that salon, I was able to like cultivate that clientele, but there was also a large clientele of like men that were coming in and which isn't what I do. So I was able to kind of like, you know, see all of that, but able to create what I needed it to be there. But the environment there was not great.
Really?
And it, that was actually the biggest thing for me over the last few years was coming to the realization that the situation that I was in was so toxic.
Was it just like normal salon toxic, right? Some are just
10 times.
10 times.
Yeah.
I've been there with salons.
Yeah. And it's sad because, you know, I have so much love for our industry and I have always wanted it to be better for the people that are in it. And so a lot of the stuff that I do is trying to create that, whether it's like one-on-one situations with stylists when I'm educating, just like letting people know that they can ask for more and be more.
So what do you think the problem is with it? Like in general, just with hair, like my last salon, Capri Salon, was so amazing. And, but I have worked at some crazy, I mean, I think in general, we're artistic, so we're a little bit crazier in general, right? And just not awareness, but it seems like there's just so many, I mean, it makes you an amazing boss, but there's so many just like crazy salons.
Yeah. I think lot of people that open salons, you know, were stylists and have never had a leadership role before. And they don't do the work to learn how to be a good leader. They just are a boss.
Right? You hit the nail on the head.
And I think a lot of times they're thinking about their own personal interest and not thinking about the team that they have there for them. And so that was my realization and was the whole inspiration to create PhD, because like all I want to do is create a positive, supportive place for stylists to live.
How do you
be their most creative?
How do you go about cultivating that, right? That environment, that energy.
It's, you know, everything. It's little things every day. And I'm still learning.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, every day.
I've never been a boss before, a leader before. I mean, I naturally am a leader.
Aries.
Yeah. So it's funny. I thought that would be the part that would be the easiest.
The leading?
Uh-huh. And it's been the hardest.
Has it? What makes it the hardest?
It's just the balance, the balance of all the different personalities and figuring out what they need and how to help them and how to help them grow. And like, even, I had a really great coaching call with, Summit Salon Systems last week. And, he was talking about goal setting and like specifically really, really good ways to set up goal setting with your staff. And how a lot of bosses will say, okay, these are the stats that you need to watch, rather than like, here's a bunch of stats. What makes sense to you to watch? Because if you let them choose the things that they feel like they can see growth in, they're going to have more growth.
Yes. Wow.
So that was a huge learning for me and just being open to hearing that, because I'm like, well, what we need to watch is this and this and this.
Yeah.
Because that's what works for me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I can already tell that you probably just this sense have a way of just understanding, talking to the people, you know what I mean? Your employees, just like in really doing intention and being able to like sit through and just not make a first judgment or just be like, okay, let's open. Is it me? Is it you? Is it just like an open communication?
Yeah. 100% all the time. And constantly letting them know how grateful I am that they're choosing this every day.
Yes. You that's know, so important.
Relationships are choices. And this is a relationship, even though it's a professional relationship.
Yeah. Yeah, they really are. And I think that's, again, hitting the nail on the head. And my last boss was always just like, very encouraging. You're amazing. You're awesome. And so many people just don't do that.
Yeah.
You know,
it's important for people to feel seen.
Yes. Mm-hmm. To feel seen, to feel heard. Mm-hmm. Now, are you still doing a lot of Redken educating with the salon, like balancing it out? Or are you just hosting classes here, still traveling?
So pre-COVID, I was traveling all the time.
Wow.
All the time.
And working full time.
So every weekend I was teaching, sometimes taking the week to go to New York and teach there. So this was supposed to be my mentee year teaching at the Redken Exchange, which was my life goal.
Right? Oh my God.
To teach at the Redken Exchange.
In 2020.
And this was the year that I was doing it. I got to do it once in March and it was the week before the shutdown.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, you got it.
Yeah.
Kimmy Chose, you got it.
I got to my goal. I did it. And that doesn't mean that I won't do it again. But
what was that like, meeting that goal and doing that? What did you do there for our listeners?
So I was part of a team of facilitators teaching a program called Color and Know Why, which was awesome because it was the first class that I ever attended there. And to me, it's like it's the foundations of hair color. It's not Redken specific. It's really for any colorist that wants to be better.
Yeah.
Right. So just really understanding the ins and outs of hair color. And so I got to be part of a team with Blake Reed Evans and George Garcia, who are amazing educators and mentors for me. And it's a 4-day long class from 9 to 5 every day. And I was going out of my mind. It was so scary and hard. Even though it's everything that I was already doing, I think it's the venue that
And you were educating in front of everyone, teaching all 4 days.
Yeah, not the whole time. Okay. We take different segments. So we teach it as a team. So it would be like, okay, Kate, you're going to do this workshop, set up the workshop, tell them what they need, run it the whole time, and this is your segment. And then, you know, the great thing about Redken Education, and especially at the Exchange, we rehearse everything and we debrief everything.
Okay.
And the process of debriefing is amazing.
Is it? What's the process of it?
So rehearsals happen, we debrief rehearsal, the day happens, we debrief the day. So debrief always starts with like, okay, let's talk about your segment. What did you like about it? And then what were the challenges or what could have been better?
Wow.
And so it's like, they ask me first and then open it up to coaching from everyone else. And it's always coaching with love, right?
Yeah.
But also direct.
With direct.
Yeah. And it's always different coaching. We focus on content and then also context.
Oh.
So content is like, you delivered this information and it actually is supposed to be this. And then context is like, you said it in this way. Here's how it could be more impactful.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, was that the most amount of people that you ever taught in front of during this?
No.
What's the most amount?
It's not the most amount, but it is the most revered venue.
Oh.
Right.
So were you dying like leading up to it, like anxiety, or were you just?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
How did you get in the moment before you walked on stage that first time?
Deep breaths.
Deep breath.
And remembering why I'm there.
I love what was your why?
It's about them. It's not about me.
Yeah.
It's about what can they get? What do they need to get out of this moment?
Wow.
Yeah. I know.
And then the shutdown.
Education is so good. It's so different from all of the other companies because what I've seen with other companies, not that they're not sharing amazing technical stuff, but it's usually a person standing on a stage speaking to a room. And in Redken, it's we are part of, like, I'm one of you and let's learn together.
I love that. Anthony Capriotti, the salon I was at, he was a Redken educator for like 15 years and he just always said that about Redken. It was just like this togetherness, this family, everything. Now, how did you know you wanted to be an educator? Like, I feel like I would be a horrible, I'd be like, all right, I don't know. Just like, I'm like, just pick this up. I don't know. Touch that. Like, how did you know you could do this? I can already tell with your words, you're amazing. And you actually taught me a class and you were amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
For me, it was like the process of going to all of these classes and feeling what it felt like and just deciding that I wanted to make other people feel like that.
I love that. Wow. But did it just come naturally, the teaching?
It's something that I've had to work on.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was nervous starting out, but like always going back to that, remembering why I'm doing it helps you get through those moments.
Yes.
So Avante actually gave me the opportunity to start educating before I was a Redken artist.
Really? What did they do?
I was just like, hey, I want to create a education system for our
So you wanted to build assistants. One.
Yeah, so I did. I created a curriculum of 30 classes.
Girl, you got that teaching energy in you.
Yeah. Well, wow. I do have a lot of academics in my family.
Okay.
Academics and artists. That's, so it's like I got to take all
of the best of both worlds
and put it together.
So you did a 30
class like curriculum, but I didn't teach all of the classes. I like kind of delegated to other stylists that were there and figured out like where they would fit in really well to like what their strengths were that they could share with the assistants and then became the education director there. And then the first education director and then the first ever artistic director of Avante. And
girl, Aries, you just like powered through that. You created your own curriculum for that's a big salon. And then you did that. Then you worked your way up.
Yeah.
It's huge.
But it's also, there's a little bit of arrogance too. It's like, I think this is how things should be.
That's the
arrogance. I'm going to create it.
And you did. Hell yeah. That's how you got it
and
done.
And like, you guys should understand that I'm right.
That is the Aries and I'm going to get it done. And they did.
Yeah.
And they're super grateful and still using that now.
And created their own, you know, version of it. But I love that I was able to help start that.
Wow. Now, do you know with COVID when you'll be able to start educating again? Like what's the word on the street going around?
So we've been doing a lot of virtual education. Yeah.
How's that?
Do you hate it? I'm a little resistant to it.
I hate virtual stuff.
Yeah.
I know.
It's not the same because I want to be in a room with somebody and connect with them.
Yeah. Like
for me, that's what it was. And also the travel. I
loved it.
Traveling. But now that I'm not doing it, I kind of like the stillness of not traveling every single weekend.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've realized that.
That happened over COVID, obviously. Mm-hmm. How was that when like the energy, when you had this, just opened the salon, you're flying everywhere educating, and then all of a sudden your world comes to a stop.
That was intense.
How was that?
It was intense. There was a lot of feelings happening.
Yeah.
For the first 3 weeks of the shutdown, I was in full panic mode and just like researching.
And again, for those listening, she opened the salon in December 2019.
Yes. So we were open for 13 weeks before the shutdown.
Wow.
And so we were like starting to gain momentum, doing well, but like full stop on March 14th.
I know that Saturday, that last night.
Yeah, that was intense. And I had just gotten back from teaching at the exchange that week.
And so you're probably all high on.
I came home on Friday, worked Saturday, and then we closed.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So did you crash?
Energetically? Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean, we all crashed.
I just went into a different
mind.
Focus on researching grants, loans. Yep. And I even created a video that I shared on my social media trying to help other salon owners and stylists navigate the process because I realized how hard it was and that there isn't education for salon owners out there, or there wasn't. So I was like, I'm going to take everything that I've learned and share it with you guys because I know that you don't have those resources and it's really hard to sift through and it's really hard to figure out.
Was it a mess?
It was a mess. It was a mess. And it was constantly changing.
Wow.
Every day it was like, okay, now it's different. Now the form's different. Now you need this other piece of information.
Wow.
So yeah.
I was hearing from someone that, where like the banks that were certified and giving out the business loans or whatever, where like eventually the systems weren't even working. Yes. Some of them, was that true? They were
crashing
or just like they would, right when they were about to like hit submit, mm-hmm. it would like kick off.
Yes. That happened a couple times.
Did that happen to you?
Yes.
I mean, I can't even handle being on the phone with Pico for 20 minutes. How did you like go? How long? This probably was weeks. How did you every day deal with that?
And you not in so a healthy way.
Okay, good. Kate, you learned afterwards, right?
Yeah.
Of course. I mean,
it was just like focus, like figure this out. And, you know, some freak outs and, you know.
Did you get to merge with it? Like any other salon owners? Did you guys just kind of group together, talk, like emotional support?
Really, I do have a close friend that is a salon owner who's also a Redken artist. She's in New Hampshire, so we were talking about a lot of things.
Yeah,
but she was going through her own stuff too, and you know, she was in a completely different situation. Been a salon owner for many, many years, had just completely renovated and moved into a new space.
Wow!
So like that's where she was, and
It's interesting because I think now we all were affected by this in one way, but hairstyles and the job thing, we were like rocked.
Yeah. Yeah. Rocked. So after the initial freak out and like financial focus, then I went into the loss of purpose.
Oh my God. The identity, the loss of identity.
My whole identity was gone. Not only just not being in the salon, but also losing education. Like I lost two jobs in one day.
Wow.
Yeah.
And especially, that teaching, that identity, that purpose, that was your purpose.
That was who I was, right?
Yes.
And it was just gone. And I was like, well, who am I outside of this? Because this is all I've been doing. Because like I said, I was working full time at the salon and then taking off, getting on a plane and flying somewhere and teaching and coming back straight to the salon. I did not have any life outside of work. Like work was my life.
Wow. So what'd you find about yourself during that time? Who are you? What do you hate, love?
I need to do other things.
I know.
Right?
I get this same.
Yeah. And that stillness is something that should be like revered.
Yeah.
Right?
Daily.
Yeah. That and connecting with the people that you really love. Making more time to do that. I wasn't doing that enough.
Yeah.
I wasn't spending enough time connecting with my family, with my closest friends. It was just kind of surface.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've spent hours and hours and hours on FaceTimes with people because we couldn't like be with them. And, you know, because I'm a Redken artist, my best friends are spread out around the country.
Oh my God.
They're not here.
They're all over.
I do have very close friends here, but the people that, you know how you connect differently with people that are like living the same purpose?
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
So those people that just like know my soul because theirs is the same.
Yeah.
They're in New Hampshire, in Denver,
nice
in
travel
Nebraska,
places.
In Oklahoma, in like, in Nashville. And so it's like, you can't go and sit with them in the park for 2 hours. So we just spent hours and hours on FaceTimes, like, connecting.
Oh my God. I love that.
And I think for all of us, it was just this realization of how important we are to each other. Like we knew it, but now we know it.
Now you know it. And still talking and still, have you seen any of them at all?
So one is coming to visit next weekend.
Oh my God. And you haven't seen them since whenever.
Yeah.
Are you excited?
Yeah. So excited.
Oh my God. That connection.
So this will be her first time seeing the salon too.
Oh my God. It's beautiful in here. My God.
There's plants everywhere.
I love it. So what is your now here? Do you plan on doing like a building another education system? Do you have an education system? Or you can't talk about it?
No, I could talk about it. It's just in the ideas in my head stage.
I love it. Oh, got it.
You know, obviously with the name PhD, it makes so much sense.
Yes. How'd you come up with the name?
I think it just happened. I love naming things.
Yeah.
And yeah, I was like throwing around dumb ideas.
Did PhD come first, or did Philadelphia hair design come first?
I think PhD came first.
Okay.
Yeah. And then like figuring out what fit with that.
Yeah.
It was Philadelphia hair obviously worked. And then it was what's the D stand for?
What's the D?
Design. Because it was like, does design sound too haircut-y when we're going to be color focused? But I think it makes sense.
So
because in the Redken world, when you say design, it means haircut.
Yes. Yes.
It's not that way throughout the whole industry, no. Especially not for consumers. No. They don't think
is
that
this
way.
Salon color focused? You do cuts?
Very
or
much
just...
so. We do cuts, yeah. But we are consistently promoting our color yeah. services.
Do you specialize in just balayage and
blonding?
Blonding.
Yeah.
The blonder, the better.
Yeah.
How long when did you know that you wanted to be a hairstylist? Right
it,
out?
No, yeah. It took me a while. I didn't go to hair school until I was 23.
Oh.
Yeah. I had kind of like a windy road.
Yeah.
When I graduated high school, moved down to this area.
Why?
Maine. Why?
Yeah. Did you move down here to Philly?
Oh, with my family.
Yeah. Oh, your whole family moved.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
And then they kept moving south and I stayed here.
You got stuck. Philly has a weird energy
yeah,
force. People
like,
stay here.
I love
here.
This. I love I'm it. Never leaving.
Did you go to school down here?
I did. I went to Jean Madeleine.
Okay.
Yeah. But right after we moved here, I actually spent some time in California volunteering at a place called the Heifer Project.
What's that?
It's a nonprofit agency that takes donations from people and gives donations of livestock to people in third world countries.
Oh my God.
Yeah, it's super cool.
I love that. Wait, what did you...
I was basically living on a farm in Northern California and
so
just like...
So what'd your soul say? How'd you know to go do that at that age 18? Like my soul, I need to go do
well,
that.
Well, it was partially me wanting to travel. And I was like, this is a way that I can see the world and also be doing something good at the same time. I knew that I wasn't going to college because I knew that I would waste it.
Yeah,
with
same.
Where I was and who I was in that moment.
Yeah.
So I was like, I'm not doing that. yeah.
So what was that experience like doing that?
Crazy.
Was that like a spiritual awakening experience?
It wasn't what I thought it was going to be. Oh. I thought that, you know, they called it an education center. So yeah. I was like, cool. I get to like teach kids about what we're doing. And it was really just like maintaining a farm every day. And I was like, this is not for me.
How long do you have to do that? Like milk cows and everything?
Goats.
Wait, you had to milk a goat?
I milked a goat.
How was that?
It was weird. But I can always say now that I did it.
I mean,
life is all about having stories, and that
oh my
is
God, yes.
a good one.
I love that you said that because life really is all about having stories, and I love that. And that's why I have the podcast. I want to hear people's story.
Yeah, that's
so
something my dad said to me
really?
Years ago, and I was like, cool. Yes. Okay.
Yes. Let's rock these stories.
Yeah.
Are you an only child? Mm-mm. No.
No. So my family is also a interesting story.
I would love to hear it.
So my older sister, same mom, different dads.
Yeah.
And then, so I was actually adopted.
You were adopted?
In high school because my biological mother had very serious mental health issues and it just like was not a good living environment. And
was that your childhood?
Yes.
So you had a lot, you have a lot of...
Mm-hmm.
Childhood stuff.
Yeah.
We love to talk about that on the podcast.
Yeah. I thought you
like
would.
To reveal the childhood. I love it. Whatever you want to talk about, whatever you're comfortable.
So my adopted mom was actually my teacher in middle school.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
So what, how did that end up happening?
So
that journey of connection?
It was, obvious that like my home life wasn't great and that, you know, the school and she saw that like I needed a good, like, adult role model, somebody like, so I would just like hang out with her after school and do homework and eat popcorn and like joke around. And we just became like really, really, really close.
Yeah.
And I moved away cause I went to live with different family members just because of the turmoil, but we still stayed very close. And then my junior year, I decided to like move back in with my mom. I was like, this is going to be okay. I just really wanted to go back to my town.
Yarmouth.
Like what I knew. And it was obvious within the first couple months that it wasn't a good situation. There was a day I came home and, you know, found her after a suicide attempt you know, had to ride to the hospital with her. And then I came home and it was just me there and I was alone. And I was like, okay, what do I do now? And so I called Deb, my mom now.
Yeah.
Aww. And I was like, this is what happened. And she was like, well, what do you want to do? And I said, I'm a kid. I want someone to tell me what to do.
Oh, you're making me cry. I don't know if I ever cried on the podcast.
Sorry.
No, please continue.
And she was like, all right, well, we're coming to get you.
Aww. She was Deb.
Yeah. Aww. She was 29 years old.
Are you serious?
And Joe, my dad, was 27 and they had only been living together for 3 months. They weren't even married yet. Weren't engaged yet. But he had also in his earlier life, when in his travels, he works in politics. So he was like working on a ranch in Houston and had this kid that he was really close with and somehow drifted apart. And he had always felt the loss of that.
Yeah.
So, and I think the kid's name was Junior. If I'm right. I hope I'm right about that. But it was like almost like it was another shot for him to like get it right.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow.
Yeah.
So they just, and it just, you guys, and that's who you call your parents now. And
that's my family.
That's your family.
Yeah. So, yeah. And both sides of their families completely welcomed me, took me in, you know, and that is my family.
That's a beautiful story. Now, do you still talk to your birth family? Is that your...
So I never was close with my dad.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, he was from media.
His really?
Whole family, he was like the one of 9 kids from media. I think I was the 18th grandchild. I don't know any of that family. But every day somebody's like, do you know Tim Curran? And I'm like, probably. But I mean, I don't know them, but they're probably my family.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. So I never had that connection and obviously felt a lot of like weird, you know, the weirdness, the abandonment. Of
feeling like not like you didn't belong.
Right. And I think I was like maybe like 21. He like he reached out like through my aunt.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't need this.
Yeah.
Like I have a dad.
Yeah.
Now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is there anyone in that family that you actually did throughout all the craziness were able to still close, like an aunt or someone that you...
Yeah. So my mom's sister, my aunt Terry, she still lives in Maine.
Yeah.
We're close. I'm close with her sons who are like 2 and 8 years younger than me.
Wow.
One lives in Brooklyn. I like visit him all the time.
Good.
Yeah.
Good. So how... Wow.
Yeah.
Really brought some tears. No, I think that's beautiful. And I think that's just such a beautiful thing that they were able, your family, they just welcomed in it all. You know, you guys probably have spent many lifetimes together.
Yeah. That's what we've always said.
100%.
Yes. Deb and I feel like we've known each other in many lifetimes. And like a few years ago, she said something to me that I was like, whoa. But she was like, you know, this is just, there was another life where you were the matriarch and like, it's coming out now.
It's coming out. Yeah. How did you work through that? Like, especially with, you know, work through a child of trauma and all of that confusion and miss and all that pain that comes with that. You know what I mean? And look at you now, fucking killing it. You just, what'd you do when you graduate, when you were 18?
You know, it's been a process over the years of trying to understand it. There was a period of time where I went to therapy and I was like, I want to understand like the diagnosis that my mother had and like the effects of that on, you know, the people surrounding her. And that was a really cool process.
Wow. Did it bring you like more understanding and peace?
I think so. Yeah, definitely. It was like a lot of these behaviors that I was seeing are typical of that.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't because so my mom was manic depressive bipolar and borderline personality disorder.
So what would happen a lot?
Most therapists will tell you is like the most lethal combination. So,
that was my ex-husband, actually.
Really? Stop. So, you know.
I know.
It's like, you know, delusions of grandeur, but also like blaming you for their illness. Mm-hmm. And so all of that stuff. So growing up as a kid, hearing that it was my fault that she was sick all the time.
So she would say that to you?
Basically.
Basically.
Not
yeah,
in those
I know.
Words, but like.
In the gaslighting way.
Yes, exactly. So years process of like retraining your brain to not believe those things.
Yeah.
and knowing your own worth. But a lot, like a huge thing for me in the early stages of that was Deb constantly telling me how strong I am.
Aww.
And, you know,
so Deb.
Yeah,
she's Deb a hug. She's down here. Are they here or are they in Maine?
So they're in South Carolina.
South Carolina.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, they were in Virginia for a while and then moved to South Carolina.
Wow, they went from Maine to South. They just wanted warmer and warmer and warmer.
Yep.
Wow.
Dad's like, I want a boat. I want that boat life.
Have you gotten to see them over this COVID time?
They came up because Deb's parents, my grandparents, are in Selins Grove, Pennsylvania.
Where's that?
It's like an hour past Harrisburg. It's kind of in the middle of nowhere.
Okay, in the middle of nowhere.
So they came up over 4th of July. So that was the last time I saw them. I am about to surprise them in November and visit. They just purchased a property in North Carolina near Asheville.
Oh my God, shut up. I want to go so bad.
I know. I'm so excited. They're closing on the property on like November 3rd and I'm going to show up on the 7th.
Oh my God.
Yeah, with our good friend Sammy that lives in New York. She's coming too.
That's so good. Yeah. And this doesn't come out till 2021. So it will already have happened. You have an amazing time with it. Oh my God, that's so exciting. Yeah. Now, before this, would you normally go down to visit them a lot?
Yeah, I was there a few times a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then do you have a good soul family here in Philadelphia, I feel like?
I do. I have some great friends. Yeah.
Have you been able to see them over this time?
Yes. We've been doing a lot of like cute little picnics in the park and stuff like that. Some couple that I'm really close with just had a baby during COVID.
COVID baby.
Yeah. So that was a huge happy thing for everybody. So
yeah.
It's been cool to like get to know him.
Yeah. Now to go back real quick, what I wanted to ask you, do you still talk to your birth mom at all or just no?
So she actually passed away.
Oh my God.
3 years ago.
Wow.
Almost 3 years ago. And this is insane. And so the day that I closed on my house was November 15th, 2017. And my good friend and I actually purchased the house together as an investment. So we signed the papers. We went directly to the house and started painting the kitchen because we both hated the paint color in the kitchen. And we're like, this is happening immediately. And as we were painting, I got a call from my aunt, Terry. And she let me know that Marsha, my mother, had passed away.
Oh my God.
And it was like the same day that I had like completed and done this thing that was like this huge milestone for me.
Wow.
And like, you know, my independence and my adult life. And it was like, you're purchasing your house. And it was like, she's going to ruin this day for me.
Wow.
Why?
Wow. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course.
So I'll never forget the date.
No. How did you feel? How do you feel now? How was that like, how did that feel? I guess wondering like having the struggle that you did with your birth mom your entire life to then passing away and not having probably closure or, you know, accepting your own closure.
So my sister and I,
you have your sister.
Yeah.
You guys are close.
My older sister. Yeah. We're very close.
Good. Yeah.
And so she and I dealt with it together. We actually went to where she was living and were able to like, go there and kind of like make peace with it.
Good.
And I actually, took a couple of items.
Yeah.
Because there were things that I have always, so part of the process for me has been like thanking her for certain things that I did get from her, like parts of me that I wouldn't have if not for her. So that's the love of music and the love of art. And she was really into photography. And I took her like old Canon camera, and then went through her record collection and took like a lot of meaningful records to me.
And that's a beautiful like closure and chapter and acceptance.
Yeah.
In that and accepting those good parts.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to tear up again. I feel like, did your sister do the same thing?
She did. Yeah.
She did.
And it was totally different items for her. It was like, you know, a couple items of clothing, like actually I think her wedding dress.
Wow.
Yeah. Things like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
I got to take a breath. I didn't know. I mean, thank you for like saying and opening and asking those questions now. You know what I mean? What still like lingers? Is there anything lingering, any lingering pain, anything lingering from that or just now like acceptance and moving?
Mostly acceptance. I'm sure there's lingering stuff.
Of course, it always comes out. always.
You know, I saw this thing online yesterday that was like, extreme independence is a trauma response.
Wow.
And I was like, oh man, does this hit hard?
That hits hard.
Yeah.
That even that.
And it's like putting up walls because like people have let you down here and let you down there. And like, so you're just go, go, go because it's like an invisible wall.
An invisible wall.
Letting people in who could possibly let you down.
Yeah. And so
that was crazy for me to see that.
And I don't know if you found, because I know for me, I always had to handle my own emotion. Like I had to emotionally get through whatever I was going through alone. So even now in my hard times, I'm very bad at asking for emotional help. Like I just want to like, don't want anyone to just know anything or nothing.
Yeah. I think I'm the opposite.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Good. It's not healthy. I'm working on it.
The way that I we all have our things, uh-huh, right? Yeah. The way that I process stuff is by talking it through with people. Yeah. So even just having a sounding board, they don't even need to say anything. It just helps me to say it out loud. And then I start to understand it more.
Wow.
Yeah. Because I also am like stubborn and don't really want advice.
Of course.
But I love giving advice. Oh,
yeah. Right. Are you good at taking your own advice?
Here and there.
Here and there.
Yes.
I'm also learning
better. Mm-hmm. I think I'm getting better.
Yeah. I think the repeated pain of not taking your own advice and then it's like, oh shit, now I'm going to take my own advice finally.
Yeah.
Totally. I'm going to love myself and take my own advice.
Yeah.
Now we're getting to the end of the episode. Mm-hmm. So this is perfect because, and again, I love that every episode ends up talking about our inner child. It's so much of our journey. So thank you again for like being open about that story. And that's going to help a lot of people. That really is. So one of the questions I like to ask at the end, actually, especially if it fits for you, is if you could go back to any of those times in your childhood and you could go talk to little Kate, you know, and just do whatever at a time she needed, what would you say? What would you be? What would you embrace?
Oh, man.
I know. Sometimes it's a tough
wow.
one.
Wow. I would just say, trust yourself.
Yeah. Believe in yourself. Trust yourself.
Yeah. Now I'm going to tear up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
No, it's good. I like it.
I got that from my therapist a couple of years ago. We did a year of like really intense inner child work. And it was a lot of like going back to those moments, that hard moments and energetically being that person that when you didn't have and say, and not, and I do that a lot, you know, and I always like, we're fragmented energy. So I'm like, I'm what you see here doing this recording is CEO Colleen, but like little traumatized Colleen likes to run the show and not as much, but like emotional stuff. And
yeah,
so it's
so
a lot
easy
of,
to let that in and just learning how to like, you know, always be the like new evolved version rather than regressing.
But you seem like me. I love like I'm on a state of self-awareness. I've accepted that I'm on that path for whatever reason. One of my purposes is to always evolve.
Yes.
Which we should, you know, but like be open to it, which seems the same to be with you.
Yeah.
Which I think plays into people with traumatic childhoods. You had to go through much. So now it's like you have the force field to do that, but I can already tell you're going to have the force field to help lots of other people.
Yeah. That's the goal.
You're going to help so many people. You are. Now, one of the other questions is what is the best piece of advice anyone's ever given you?
I've had so many great people give me great advice, especially within the Redken world.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many great mentors there and moments that I've had. I would say the best piece of advice was early on in my Redken career. A friend of mine said, you know, you have to ask for it.
Oh, yeah.
If you don't ask for what you want, you'll never get it.
Yes. Oh, God. I love that. I love that. I believe in that. And I always say, what's it going to hurt people? Are they going to say yes or are they going to say no?
Right.
And you're not going to die from no. Yeah. You're not going to die from hearing a no.
Yeah.
So if you're listening to that.
But if you don't put it out there, no one ever knows that that's what you wanted.
Yeah. 100%.
You know? So even in the process of getting to working at the exchange, like that was a process over years of me emailing people and saying, hey, this is my goal. And here's what I'm doing to try and get there. And just like making them aware of it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. So for those listening, if you're wondering, just ask.
Yeah.
Ask the question. Now, what piece of advice do you want to leave for our listening audience? This has been an amazing episode.
Hmm. would say have the courage to make the change. If there's a change that you're thinking about making, like, jump towards it, you know?
Yes, don't be scared. Don't be scared. It's easy for us to say because clearly we enjoy change.
Right.
You know, but just do it.
Yeah.
Do it because it's beautiful on the other side of change. This has been amazing. You are amazing, especially to hear your journey through that growing up with all that pain and what you've been able to create for yourself and do. And again, just your strength, seriously, on social media really impressed me from just leaving your clientele, your money. Like, I'm so, as hairstylists, we get so attached to the money every week, every day. And like, you just be like, I trust it. I trust my journey. I trust where this is going. You left that and look at you now. Here you are. You went through COVID, still surviving it.
Thank you. You know, what's interesting with that is like, it's never been about money for me.
Yeah.
Even though it's a job and I get money from it, money was never my motivator.
Your attachment. Yeah, your motivator.
Yeah.
It was just to help and educate.
Yeah.
And bring people together.
And make people feel good. Like, that's really when you boil it down. It's like, I'm making hairstylists feel good. Yep. I'm making my clients feel good. All of that.
Yeah.
It's just. Yeah.
And having that, right, is why you're able to create all of this and create a beautiful surroundings of abundance because you're coming from that place.
Yeah, and if you do what you're passionate about, the money will follow.
The money will always follow. Wow. Thank you. Please tell everyone where they can find you at, your social media handles, everything, the salon, everything.
Yeah, so you can follow the salon on Instagram at Philadelphia Hair Design. My personal and hair page is at Hair by Kate C. And check out our website, philadelphiahairdesign.com.
Guys, and if you're in the Philadelphia or even outside of Philadelphia, come down here. She is seriously a blonde expert. She's educated me before. I've seen her work. She's really, really amazing. And this spot is positive vibes. It's beautiful. It's open space. So come down here and check it out.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being
here. Thank you again for being real, raw, telling me your truth. You're beautiful inside and out. And this was amazing. Thank you everyone for listening. I love you guys and have a great week.